This podcast is brought to you by ORCHSE Strategies, an industry leader in developing innovative, sustainable approaches for protecting workers and the environment. And a big thank you for their sponsorship to the Pre-Accident Podcast. ORCHSE's main focus and passion is in fostering EH&S performance excellence in all their companies. When members participate in one or more of ORCHSE's 9 different specialized networks, or if they engage in one of their task force or working groups, something very special happens. The sharing of ideas frequently results in cutting-edge solutions that have practical applications immediately. For example, ORC has been at the forefront of efforts to create new approaches for fatal and serious injury prevention and has helped plan, conduct, and create conferences on human and organizational performance. If you're interested in learning more about the unique opportunities available through ORCHSE, please contact our buddy Linda Haney at 202-510-0509 or if you'd rather pop her an email, it's linda.haney, L-I-N-D-A dot H-A-N-E-Y, at O-R-C-H-S-E.com. Now, let's listen to the podcast. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. It's time for the special all-girl episode, except I'm not a girl. But for today, I'm going to be an honorary girl, so it can be an all-girl episode, because if I don't take the honorary girl title, it won't be an all-girl episode. No, I'm kidding. Don't get too freaked out by that. So today's podcast is really interesting. We're going to talk to Beth Lay and Stephanie Swindle. So Beth's from Calpine, Stephanie's from Southern, Georgia Power, Southern. And they're actually going to give a presentation at the WEC conference, the Western Electricity Cooperative Conference on Human Performance. A great, great, wonderful meeting, really fun, really cool place, too, kind of in a loft in Salt Lake City. I felt like I needed to have a little hat and carry a guitar around and go to the tea store and stuff like that. It was like it was very cool, very, very cool. This presentation is great. You're going to really like this podcast. I really owe a huge thanks to the WEC folks for letting me have access to this, letting me actually get this recording and put it up here. They're going to talk about learning teams, and they're not going to talk about learning teams the way we talk about learning teams other times on this podcast. What they're going to talk about specifically is how they do learning teams and some success stories. Now, I've cut some examples out because the presentation was pretty visual. In fact, Stephanie had a specially produced video of an experience they had in Georgia Power where they used a learning team to resolve a rather huge problem. If you ever get a chance to see this, it kind of made me cry. It's really good. It's really good. But this discussion we're going to have today is really kind of an inside baseball look at managing an organization that's using learning teams. I think you're going to love it. I love Beth. I love Stephanie. It really is a great podcast. How are you doing? Holy cow. It has been, I don't know what word I want to use, actually. Surprising. I'm surprised by the outcome of the election in the United States. It certainly wasn't what I thought would happen. And I guess the jury will be out, and we'll see how this all sort of happens. The world is, I don't know what to say. England moved out of the Euro, the Brexit. Donald Trump is the president-elect of the United States. Holy guacamole. What is up now down and down now up? I don't even know where to go with this. But I'm excited for November. I'm always excited for December. And I'm really excited for the new year. And we'll talk about that more as we progress. I should probably shut up because this podcast is worth you listening to, and the stuff I say is not that interesting. But nonetheless, I'm here for you at any time. Give me a ring if you need some help. Thanks for all your comments. Goodness me. I can't even believe how many people are listening to the podcast. And what actually keeps me going is how the stories they tell are so amazingly positive. about the changes they're doing to their organization. You guys know this. I mean, I don't know if I've told you, but you're making the world a better place. You really are. You're saving jobs and lives, and both are important. So without any further ado, from the WEC Conference 2016 in Salt Lake City, here is Beth Lay and Stephanie Swindon.
So I thought I'd start with the introduction of myself and kind of my HP journey, because I really think it feeds into how I got involved with Learning Teens. So on April 4th, 2013, my life was rocked, literally. I was at a power plant. I grew up in power generation, and I was a maintenance manager at a plant. I was in the bathroom when an explosion occurred. So not a good day. And so the first blast sucked me in, where I hit one side of the stall, and the second one sucked me out, where I hit the other side of the stall. Now, this is a really embarrassing part of the story, but I tell it because I think it's important for you to know where my head was. So things started hitting the ceiling where I was. I was about 100 yards away from the explosion, and all I could think was, I've got to get my hard hat on in case this ceiling comes down on top of me, because I don't know what's happening at this point. Well, I went running out of the bathroom, down the hallway, into my office. I put on my hard hat, and then I pulled up my pants. So that kind of gives you some sort of framework of how I was going a little crazy. I called my husband. I said, I'm fine. At this point, the operators started coming down from the units, and they, you know, the units were just shutting down, and it was screaming because all the safeties had lifted. And I can remember it was just like a movie. They were all covered in coal dust, and they were all kind of hanging on each other, but thankfully they were okay. And within an hour and a half, we found out that everyone was okay by some miracle. There were people who were standing really close to the generator when it exploded, and pieces of machinery went flying by their head. We had a guy in a two-story building who was on the second story. The building collapsed on top of him, and he crawled out. Story after story after story, we had a huge near miss, and thankfully everybody was okay. So I will tell you, that day was really, really difficult for me, but the days after that were even harder because, you know, we had to get our act back together. And I started a personal journey of how did this happen. And so at that point, I read everything I could on change management, on how to prevent accidents from happening, anything I could get my hands on when I had time, because, you know, I was working all the time. And then I went to a training class taught by Dr. Todd Conklin in the back. And that's when my perspective on life forever changed, because what I had been looking for was human performance. And I was so taken by that day, I read every book I could get my hands on right away, and I even applied for the job so I could do it full time. And that was a couple years ago, and I was really excited about it then. But I will tell you, what I've seen from Learning Teens has me even more excited, because I really, truly believe it's making a difference.
My name is Beth Lay, and I'm the Director of Human Performance for Calpine. Calpine, a lot of people haven't heard of Calpine, even though it's a fairly large company. We are owner-operator of power plants, mostly cogen, and we are an independent power producer. So we have a cluster of plants in California, New York area, and also Texas. We have about 80-plus power plants. And I've been with Calpine for about 3 years. So Stephanie and I are going to talk to you about our journey with respect to Learning Teens. And I will tell you with the caveat that we, Calpine, are very early in the journey, and Stephanie's further along. So part of what we'll be doing is sharing lessons right here in front of you. So we're going to actually start out with talking about the process of Learning Teens. Then we're going to move into sharing some lessons and strategies, both early and later in the process. And then we're going to do a little bit more storytelling. So who in here has actually participated in a Learning Team? Can you hold your hand up really high?
Oh, good.
Okay. Well, that's interesting, because I actually thought that we might have a few more. So in front of you, you should have two handouts. So we'll be referring to these handouts as we work through the process of Learning Teams. With that, back to you, Stephanie.
All right. So I'm going to start with a really important question. What color is the dress? I heard white and gold. Anybody see anything different? Blue and black. All right, so a room full of about 80 people, and we're looking at the same picture, and we can't even agree on what color the dress is, and we have all the same information. But what we don't have is each other's perspective. So someone may see white and gold. I see white and gold every day. And someone may see blue and black. And that's what's really important in these learning teams, is to make sure you understand and appreciate everyone's perspective. So in the past, and I don't know if you've done this, but I have done this. Have you called everybody in one at a time? What's your story? What do you think happened? What do you think happened? And then we get another group together at the end of the day and say, okay, who do you think's telling the truth? What do you think really happened? Have y'all seen that before? Well, that's a little different that we're doing with these learning teams, is we're getting everyone's perspective in the room at the same time. So you may be telling a story, and then you're going to tell your part of the story, and they may be different, and that's okay. Because what we want to understand and appreciate is everyone's perspective on what's going on. So Todd talked through this as well. So what we're really trying to do through these learning teams is to prevent reoccurrence. And when I went through my situation, all I wanted to do is to make sure it didn't happen again. I don't know that I can do that, but I at least want to try. So when you have an incident, and a lot of times we call them investigations. And when I think the word investigation, you got your mouth full. What do you think? I didn't mean to catch you. What do you think an investigation is? What do you think of?
Finding the cause.
Well, that's a very nice way to put it. When I think of investigation, I think someone's trying to find something I did wrong. I mean, I really feel like I'm under the light, being interrogated, and they're trying to figure out what I did wrong. And so we've got to really get away from that and really understand and appreciate that perspective and that person's story. And through that, we really want to do the learning. And so we want to really call investigations event learnings, because we're not there to figure out what you did wrong. We're not there to blame. What we're there to do is really to learn what happened to make sure it doesn't happen again. And one of the best stories I can think about this is a football example. I'm a big Alabama fan, and I love football. So Roll Tide, I like that. So I thought we'd start with a football discussion. So do y'all remember the Super Bowl 2 years ago? Not the Peyton Manning. Oh, you know. All right, so what happened 2 years ago? An interception toward the end of the game, right? So what was the consequence? There was a loss, right? There was a loss. And what did everybody in the country, probably at the same time, say within 15 seconds of that interception? Oh, you said best call there could be. I don't think that's what everybody else said. Why didn't they run the ball, right? Why did they throw the ball? Why in the world, with one of the best running backs in the country, do you throw the ball? So that's kind of the retrospective understanding, what they should have, could have, would have done. Well, let's talk about the context. So that coach, he has a statistician in his ear saying, on the 1 yard line, we are more successful throwing the ball. So he has that information. He also knows it's second down. So whatever happens, I have one more down. I can try something else. I can give it to the running back and make that happen. Never in his mind did he think interception. Never in his mind. And they've actually called this play the worst coach's play call in history. Now, if you make it to the Super Bowl a couple times, you're probably a pretty decent coach. But yet, we were so ready to blame that coach for that call. Probably not the right call, but it was a call based off the information he had at that time. And I want you to think about this a little bit more. Think about what we're talking about. We're talking about this one play, aren't we? The interception that you remember. Do you remember anything else about that game? No, we remember that one play, and it was close to the end of the game. Do you realize there were 156 other plays in that ballgame? Do you think play number 3 or 64 or 98 may have made a difference in that ballgame? But yet, we human nature, we focus on that event closest to the consequence. And when you do that, you miss out on so much information. because there were 156 other plays that could have made a difference. So what we find is through these learning teams that there really is a sweet spot where we take the time to really learn and understand what happened. So what we normally do is we have an event, and we don't like events to happen, do we? We like to put them to bed and move on. So what we try to do is we get a little bit of information. We don't take much time. We fix it here, and we walk away from it. But what we do when we do that is we probably make it worse. Instead of truly taking the time, gathering the information we really need to really have the best solution, and also making sure you have the right people in the room to have that discussion. So there really is that sweet spot in taking the time to do that. So I'm a fan of RCAs when it's equipment related. I don't think it works when you bring people into it. Because what happens, and we use 5Y a lot in our organization, you have an event, we ask why that happened, why that happened, why that happened, and what do we normally find? Someone messed up. You usually find human error. And you are looking for that one root cause. Well, this is so linear. The problem with that is usually there's not one root cause. There's usually a lot of other things going on. And if you use an RCA type approach and start at the event and go backwards, you're going to find someone messed up every time. It might be pretty easy to stop right there, and you're really not going to get all the information. So through the learning teams, what you want to do is start way back in the process and move toward the event. And in fact, a lot of times, I don't even talk about the event in the learning teams. Now, I've done probably about 150 of these. In Southern Company, we've done about 500 of these. And what we're just amazed about is how much information we're uncovering. I mean, it's pretty obvious where the person messed up, but we don't even focus on that. We focus on trying to get all this information. Maybe it was a fair reporting. Maybe it was some latent conditions. Maybe it was some additional hazards or some near misses. I don't know what it's going to be until I get that employee's story and get their perspective on it. But once again, you'll see right here, errors are closest to the event. So just think, if we stopped right here, how much information we would not be getting. And so we start way back in the process. And in fact, when I'm asking the employee to tell me their story, so tell me how the month was going. Tell me about your week. Because they're so eager to try to get to that event, I really don't care. I want to know where their head was and why they were doing what they were doing. And more importantly, how. That's the question. So when we start asking the questions, it's all about the how. So Beth is going to go over the process in a minute. But one of the things I'll tell you is the process itself is not complex. I mean, it's very, very simple. We want to get the employee's story, and we want to take the time to really understand what happened. Because what we find is the stories are usually complex, and there's a lot more to them than really what you see initially.
So we are on the opposite end, as Stephanie, as far as our journey goes. We've done about a dozen. So she's done about 200. And we at Calpine have done about a dozen. So that kind of gives you some idea. You'll get to see both perspectives from our talk. So in front of you, you have two tip sheets. And one is actually from Southern Company, and it's this one. And then one is from Calpine, and it says at the top, how to lead a learning team. You'll find some commonalities with both of these, and you may also find some differences, because we didn't collaborate. In fact, we shared these with each other about a week ago. So why don't we talk about the commonalities? And I think the idea is there's a general structure to it, and then when you design your own process, you'll design your own process, one that works for you. But the general structure is that you start out in learning mode. So you basically start out in a very exploratory mode where you're just trying to understand the work. Then you have soak time. And the soak time is really key. And soak time is basically where you just take some time where people are not focusing on the process and they have time to for their thoughts to gel and to come up with more ideas. Then you come back together. You come back together in learning mode again. And then you move into the mode where you're trying to come up with improvement ideas. So if you take a look at this, again, starting off in learning mode, moving to soak time, starting again in learning mode, and then working on coming up with improvement ideas. And we have suggested some questions for you Because really the key to this process is in the questions that you ask. One method that we have used, we actually learned how to do this process from Bob Edwards. And when Bob Edwards came to Calpine to teach us how to do it, the way that we learned is by actually watching him lead a couple of learning teams. And he was actually doing this thing where he moved from the black line to the blue line. Are you all familiar with that concept of black line and blue line work? I see some head shaking no. So if you look at the top corner of the How to Lead a Learning Team handout, you'll see a little sketch in there, black line and blue line. So the theory behind that is that the black line is work as planned or work as designed. So your black line is your, it's your procedures, it's your rules, it's your standards. But then we know that with for our work, which is complex and variable, we will always have variability. So we know that for actual work in our business, the blue line is going to go up and down. It's going to vary along the black line, and we expect that. And so when Bob leads a learning team, he kind of starts out with the black line. So he's asking questions about, tell me about the work that you do, tell me about the procedures, tell me about your training. And then he gradually moves to the blue line, and it's really subtle. And one of the techniques that he has been using is he'll start out writing with a black marker, and then as he moves toward the blue line, he'll actually switch markers. And he doesn't say a word about it. He just kind of switches as he moves toward the blue line conversation. Stephanie, would you like to add some things to that?
Yeah, I think one of the important things that we understood about this process, and like I said, it's pretty simple. I mean, so many times we have investigations where you had to follow all these flow charts and do all these check marks. What you're really trying to do is really understand the employee's perspective and their story. But the other thing I'd highlight is sometimes we only focus on what went wrong. You really want to make sure you're focusing on what went right as well and highlighting the successes also. Because so many times we're just so focused on, okay, what went wrong? What went wrong? Let's focus on that. We got to remember, we do a lot of really good things right.
Who do you involve in a learning team? Separately, we came up with who to involve. And if you turn the sheet over, the Calpine sheet, on how to plan a learning team, at the very top of it, I have a title there, Pulling the Right People Together. And I actually might have borrowed that title from you, Stephanie, so thank you. And there are a couple of commonalities between the way that Southern Company and Stephanie plan learning teams and the way that Calpine plan learning teams, some things that we kind of learned on our own as we went through it. And one of those key commonalities is you want to bring in different perspectives. And so the way that we've been doing that at Calpine is if we have an event, then and we're going to pull a learning team together, we reach out into our other plants and say, where have we had a similar event? Where has this happened before? And we try to get a couple people from those other plants to join the learning team. One is to bring that different perspective, but as important or even more important is a core philosophy of our human performance program is building relationships across plants. So this is an opportunity for us to build those cross-plant relationships. Would you like to add to that?
Yeah, I think like when you look at the makeup of the team, you'll notice a couple things. Like one of the big things is the person involved is there from the very beginning to the very end. So it's not like we call them in and ask them to leave and we'll let you know. They are there to tell us the story, but they're also there to help us with the solutions, because who knows better than what happened than the person involved. And the other thing that we've done recently that has really, I think, helped is when we start putting the learning team together, this is one of the questions, actually. Has anyone tried peer learning teams? What we try to do is tell the person, who would you like in the room with you? Who would you feel comfortable with? It makes it feel less of an investigation, but lets them feel comfortable that, hey, we're really here to learn. We're not here to find blame. Tell us who you want in the room with us. And then, you know, we'll talk through the other people. You see supervisor on the list here, so the immediate supervisor, but you do not see manager. So that was the other question. We do not normally have managers in the room. What I typically do is have the manager come and kick it off, show their support for the process, and discreetly leave. And I want to make sure that they feel included. So one of the things I do afterwards is I give them a verbal update of kind of how it went. So they're not out of the loop. They get an update as soon as it's over. But what we find is if the manager's in the room, we don't get the information like we'd like. It's like yes, no, very short answers. And in fact, I've had a couple managers ask to sit in. I let them for a little while, and I've had to actually ask them to leave because it was obvious the employees were not comfortable. And the other situation I had was a manager came in there. I said, yeah, but I don't want you disrupting their process. She said, I won't say a word. Well, the second we had a break, you know what she did? She went running over there and started asking all those questions in the way that really was intimidating to that employee. So it's very, very, I tell you this, as lessons learned, really create that environment where the employees feel safe to tell their story. And if that means the manager's not in the room, that means the manager's not in the room. And the other thing I'd like to highlight is that fresh perspective, that new set of eyes. I think that's one of the reasons that I've been able to do so many of them is I come from generation and I'm now on the distribution side. So I'm in there really, truly asking questions. I really am just now learning about the wire side of the business. And so I can ask those off-the-wall questions and really get that fresh perspective. So that fresh set of eyes, I will tell you most of our solutions or ideas come from that fresh set of eyes because they're not tuned into how things are normally done. They're really saying, well, why don't you do it that way? And I can't tell you how many times they say, well, I don't know. We never thought of it that way. So really having that fresh perspective, I'd say, is key. So if you have nobody else in the room, the person involved, and that fresh set of eyes.
Wall of discovery. Would you like to start out with sharing the wall of discovery and your experiences?
Yeah, so the other thing that's different about this, and I wish I had an example of this, but, like, Bob, if you're telling me what's going on, and I think some of you told me this, yes, we're talking about this yesterday, and I'm taking notes on what you're telling me. Do you know what I'm writing?
I'm not
sure. No, probably, you probably can't see it. I mean, I could be saying, hey, this guy's a fool. I mean, you wouldn't know. You wouldn't know. So what we do with these wall of discovery is we keep everything on a flip chart. So everything is transparent. So as a facilitator, I grab the marker, and I start just writing down as they're telling me the story. And as they're telling me the story, the other thing I try to do is make sure I don't interrupt. Because if you're telling me your story, and I'm like, well, why did you do that? Well, why did you do that? All of a sudden, I'm not hearing your story. I'm trying to find some things, and you start getting defensive. And so we really are very careful about how we ask those questions. For example, if I asked you, were you following procedure? How does that make you feel? What are you going to answer?
Yes.
Yes, right? Exactly, right? Yes. And anything else? No, there's not going to be anything. Whereas if I asked you this, tell me a little bit about the procedure. Is it even doable for the job you were doing? Is that a different question? So as much as we can, we spend a lot of time with our facilitators making sure that they have that atmosphere. But the other thing we do is make sure it's transparent and write down everything that's said so that they can see it. And what we do is I may start with the marker in my hand, but anybody in that room can have the marker at any point. And my favorite is when the person involved is like, hey, can I grab that marker? Let me draw out what was going on so I can better help. And about 2 months ago, I was in one, and we were doing great. We were having great conversation. And about that time, a guy stood up, and he came running toward me. I'm like, what is going on? He said, give me that marker. I said, what? He said, I'm going to give you all a lesson. But that's the kind of environment that you want to create. He spent about 30 minutes with that marker, drawing everything out, and gave us one of the best lessons that we could have had about what was going on. So not only was it good for me, but it was good for everybody in that room. And when you create that environment where it's really a part of a team and it doesn't feel like an investigation, you're just learning and you're having fun doing it. And I will tell you the other thing that we try to do is we laugh a lot. We have fun when we're learning because if it feels intimidating, it will be intimidating.
So you're going to notice a theme here, and Stephanie's going to be sharing lessons in what to do, and I may be sharing lessons in what not to do. You know, we learn as well from things that go wrong. And so when you look at the wall of discovery, I'll share with you a couple of experiences that we had. We were doing a learning team at a power plant in Northern California about 2 weeks ago. And we're in the control room because we usually try to do them in the control room so that the control room operators can participate. And it's a really small control room. So we're sitting in there, we're improvising, we're using just large sheets of paper from the copier. So really improvising on tools. And went through the learning team, had these large sheets of paper in a pile on the floor, And then when we got to the part where we're actually trying to come up with improvement ideas, we kind of fell flat. They really weren't. And I think that one reason that we fell flat on that is because people weren't able to peruse the whole story. They weren't able to see all of the ideas posted around the wall. So I think that that's really key, is that you have those ideas posted around the wall so people can see the big picture when they get done with it. Another way that, another what not to do as far as your wall of discovery is we've had times when our facilitators didn't write down exactly what was said. They did some interpretation, or people would talk and they wouldn't be writing. And you could see that the learning team participants would just get uncomfortable. So write down what they say as they say it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also tell the group, if you see something I write wrong, come correct it. It's not going to hurt my feelings. I want to make sure it's accurate. And a lot of times I'll say, okay, is this what you just said? I want to make sure that that's accurate, just so that they feel comfortable and they're really getting their story told. I mean, what's interesting about this is I now have employees who want to have event learnings. Have you ever had an employee come to you and say, hey, can we do an investigation on this? No, I mean, you haven't. But now I have employees that really feel like the process allows them to tell their story and be a part of it and make it better.
So here are some of Calpine's early lessons. Stephanie touched on this already, which is too many managers, but I will share with you as well that it's awkward. I mean, you go into a power plant, you say, well, we want to lead this learning team, and especially when you're early in the process and they don't really know what a learning team is or what to expect, to ask them to leave the room and leave you there with a group of employees, it's really kind of a difficult dance. And quite honestly, a couple of them that we've led early on, we let them stay in, and we could see the results. I mean, you really didn't get the openness. You didn't get the conversation ideas that you'd like to have. So, Stephanie, I think you had some. Did you have any more tips or strategies around dealing with that?
No, I would tell you, if you go down this road, don't be afraid to kick them out. I mean, I do that now, and I'm okay with it because what I've seen is the benefit of it every time. I mean, I'd love for them to be in there, but if they're shutting down conversation, it's really not beneficial for anybody.
Question.
A kind of comment, perhaps. Has there been a time when maybe the manager wanted to stay in and you've asked the group if they mind if they stay in?
Yeah, so I've had a couple of times where the manager says, I don't know what y'all are doing. I want to see. So I always make sure that the team is okay with it, and we'll take a break about an hour in, just to make sure, and I'll go to the employee, are you still comfortable? Just to make sure that they're okay.
And my comment would be that I've been in that situation as well, and although they've said, yes, we're fine with it, I found that they seem more confrontational, and when they do discuss or talk, it's a different tone.
Yeah. Well, so I think that's important to make sure you have the right facilitator, because the whole time we're talking, I'm reading the language, and if I see it's not going well and we're not, I know there's more. You know when there's more. I mean, you can read people. I'll just say, hey, why don't you go disappear for another hour and just see what happens?
Great point. And also the nonverbals from the manager, too, to pay attention to those, because they might be sitting there and paying attention, and the folks are being open and honest. When you get the eye roll effect or the, you know, kind of stuff from the manager, then that's going to be, you know, create a barrier to the openness of the team, too.
It is, and the managers haven't really been trained on how to ask the questions. And so we were actually doing a simulation one time. I mean, this wasn't even real. I was teaching event learning, and we were simulating. And so everybody was doing role-playing. It was going well. The guy was talking. He was making stuff up. And we were having a great time. And it's like the manager couldn't stand it anymore. And he asked the direct question that I was telling you about, were you following procedure? And immediately the whole atmosphere changed in the room. And thankfully we were simulating, and I said, time out. Did y'all just see what happened? Because the person involved who was faking it immediately started going, yes, no, maybe, two. I mean, we didn't get any information. Nothing was being elaborated on. So it's so important to make sure that you're creating that right atmosphere.
Along the same lines of not having management, have you had any barriers, I guess, or interactions with, like, union members and their representatives coming into the room or have to be present?
So we always say the more the merrier. If you want to learn, come on in. You know, because sometimes they're not sure if they're in trouble or not, so they want a union representation, the more the merrier. If that's going to make you comfortable, come on in. It's fine. And what we find, and I've followed up with the union folks several times, how's it going? Well, whatever you're doing, keep doing it, because we're not getting complaints. So they're seeing the benefit of it, and actually been some of our biggest proponents, because they really feel like it's a lot better ideas, and we're not blaming people as we used to.
So another lesson in what not to do. The way that we learned how to do learning teams is as I mentioned earlier, we called Bob Edwards in, and we basically watched him lead a couple of learning teams. And in fact, if you look at the questions on this sheet, these are almost verbatim Bob's questions and the order that he asked them. So he actually used this process, and it was very skillful, of asking questions, going along the black line, and gradually as he built up trust, moving to the blue line type questions where he's actually getting into more areas where work varies from process or procedure and what's really going on with real work. So I'm leading my first learning team by myself, and I'm trying to follow this process. I'm trying to be pretty prescriptive about it because I thought that's what you're supposed to do. And I'm trying to basically go black line, black line, black line, gradually into blue line, blue line. And it did not go well at all. The team kept just kind of, I could see their frustration. They're going, well, you're not really talking about what we want to talk about. And so I'm trying to keep us in these lines, being prescriptive here. And when I finally relaxed and just said, okay, tell me what you're concerned about, and kind of let them take the lead in it, everything changed. And we finally were able to hold a productive learning team. And Stephanie, I know you have a great lesson on that.
Yeah, so one of the things that I figured out is it's a good learning team when I'm not saying anything. Because I kind of get everybody comfortable, and then all of a sudden they're all doing the learning, and I'm just kind of capturing it, and every once in a while just interjecting a question here or there. But if they don't even know I'm there, that's when it's good, because they're really part of the team, and it just makes a whole different atmosphere. But to your point, every single one is different, and it's all about reading the group and making sure you're doing what you can to make them comfortable. There is not a prescriptive way to do this. It's just take it wherever it goes, because you never know where it's going to go.
And Stephanie told me something yesterday, which I think these are the words of wisdom. I mean, basically, what you said is that the only structure you really use is you go in and you say, tell me the story. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. Right? The other adamant thing I'm about is we stay in learning mode. So it kind of becomes a joke if they try to solve, because, you know, we have a bunch of engineers in our company. We like to solve things quickly. And so they'll come in and like, hey, I know how to solve this. I'm like, well, I don't care if it's going to be the next space shuttle. I don't care what it is. We're not talking about solutions yet. And so it kind of becomes a joke, so that we truly stay in learning mode. And ironically, when it comes time for the solutions, I'm like, didn't you have an idea yesterday? Oh, yeah, I did. But it won't work now that we've learned more. It works every time. Make sure you stay in that learning mode.
So leader bias. We've led two learning teams where the learning team leader had a lot of knowledge, a lot of expertise in whatever issue around the event that we were leading. For example, we were leading one around an ammonia release. And the person who was facilitating that, when he walked in, he had a good idea of what the solutions were before we even started. So he was struggling the whole time to basically stay in that questioning, open questioning mode. And in fact, we stepped out of the room a couple of times and I said, wait, you know, you're here to let them talk and to learn from them. And so that's one challenge that we haven't quite figured out, is when you have a person who's facilitating, who they already have this knowledge and or expertise that's totally relevant to the problem that you're working on.
I think you covered it.
Okay. Did you have any tips for that, though?
As far as I think when you're setting up the learning team, you got to make sure that you're setting the atmosphere where all those biases go away. And we do some things. Like, one of the things I do is if you ask me to come to a learning team, I will ask you two questions. Where do you want me and what time? That is all the information I need to know. Because if I have any information about what happened, at that point, I am biased. I want to hear the story for the very first time from those involved. I do not want to know any information. In fact, they'll start telling me, I'm like, no. I'll get off conference calls. Do not give me any information because I want to make sure that we're keeping this as clean. So as long as the facilitator is unbiased, you're usually okay. But it's sometimes a battle to make sure that everybody in the room doesn't have those same biases.
In fact, you're leading into the next lesson that we've learned, and I think we're still learning this one. And I started out with this bullet being, make sure that you scope it correctly. Because some of the learning teams that we've done, which have been around an event, such as a failure cascade of equipment, or as I mentioned, the ammonia release, we focus the learning team around our response to those events versus on the events themselves, which could be somewhat mechanical. And for the ammonia release or the equipment failure cascade, you also have you may have an RCA. So my lesson around this one was to say, well, make sure you scope it correctly. But Stephanie had a different approach.
Yeah, I don't scope it. I don't know what the scope is because I don't know what happened. I let the team figure out what the scope is. They know better what happened than I do.
So can you imagine that? I mean, this might be one of the challenges of the process, especially as you're a new facilitator, to walk into a meeting cold, not knowing what the problem is.
It's hard.
It can be challenging.
The first couple times I was like, I'm not sure. Because, you know, I'm an engineer. I like to solve things. And, you know, when I used to do RCAs, I would gather up all the information before I walked in there so I knew exactly what happened so there wasn't any question they couldn't ask me. And now I'm going in there completely blind. I mean, there's ones I'm in there for about 5 minutes. I'm like, oh, it was a vehicle accident? I didn't even know. Because I'm truly getting the information for the first time there.
Yes.
Just curious, on your learning teams, you know, and I've done RCAs, so I gather recordings, I gather, you know, data from EMS or SCADA, depending on the situations, that could capture time frames and events associated with an incident. Do you guys bring that in, or do you just let the story unfold by itself? Or at any point in time, do you bring in the statistical data or evidence, if you will?
We haven't. We don't do that because we're really not focusing on the event itself much at all.
Well, and we have, though. I mean, so what we'll have is a supervisor usually has it handy. And so during the soak time, we'll say go and get it ready or whatever, because what we find, like especially if it's a DCC type of operation, you know, in the moment, they think they remember what happened, but they truly want to hear what happened. And I'll have an example in a little bit you'll hear. But they want to hear it. And so we bring any information we can into the room if they request it. Hey, do we have video of this or do we have audio of this? Let's bring it in the room. But once again, it's them driving it, not me.
So the last early lesson I'm going to share with you is, naively, I thought that once we lead a learning team, you go in, you lead the learning team, you walk out of the meeting, and as a facilitator, you're pretty much done with it. Well, the first one that I led has continued to give. And we're actually going to talk in a little bit more detail about that one. But what I learned from that is that I own the problem now. Like, I own this issue. And subsequent to the first learning team meeting, we've had kind of pop-up impromptu learning team meetings at different plants. When I go to other plants, I'll watch how they do the process. And I've been involved in, say, writing the technical bulletin to change the inspection requirements. And so that's one thing I learned, that it just keeps on giving. You don't walk out of the meeting and say, oh, I'm done. You keep going with it.
Well, if y'all think that we can really solve all the issues in a one session or two session meeting, we're kidding ourselves. I mean, it's got to be about that continuous improvement. So if something happens and we think we tried some things, well, maybe it didn't quite work. Well, let's open it back up again and let's have some more conversation about it, because it's really got to be about that continuous improvement. Because I can't wait for y'all to see this example I have in a minute. But when it was done, they said, well, I thought you fixed this, because we had another incident. I thought you fixed that with the event learning. And the same thing, if you think we can solve all our procedural issues in one session, you got to be kidding yourselves. It's better, but it's still not perfect. We got to keep that mindset.
So as much as that must have sounded like early struggles. That was actually early lessons. So there's probably a lot of overlap between our early struggles and our early lessons. So I'm going to share with you now some of our early struggles. Yes. Question?
Well, I was just wondering if you have any tips on dealing with the resistance to continually learning about something. I think that there's not a lot of bandwidth right now, like in my company, there's not a lot of bandwidth for it. The thought of this, that, you know, I don't think we're unusual either. We want to tie it up in a bow as quick as we can. So how do you must get that. Tell me how you deal with it.
Oh, all the time. I mean, because we got other things going on, so we want to put that one to bed and move on. I don't know that I have a great solution, but sometimes, because of the role I play, I just call the right people together and say, hey, I don't think we're done. There's been a couple of it learnings where the manager's like, okay, we're good. I'm like, no. I mean, the employees are still asking questions. Employees are still concerned. We're going to meet again. And I just have to say, if we're really going to do this HP, if we're going to do this route, we've got to make sure that the employees feel comfortable with the solutions that we're coming up with. Because if they're owning the solutions, it's going to make everybody better because you have the empowerment to get it taken care of. And so I think what you can do is get a couple success stories, and then you can start telling that story.
And that was almost like a plant, like a lead-in to these next topics, some of our early struggles, which we haven't solved yet. And so one early struggle is gaining momentum. As I mentioned, we've done a handful. We've done a dozen. And can't seem to really get motion, you know, get more going. And with that, Stephanie, you had a great tip on that one.
Yeah, so I have a great boss. She is a VP, and she said she was so excited about this learning team process. She said, we're going to do it for everything. And so initially, we probably did way too many of them. But it was good and it was bad. It was good because we had more people exposed to it, and so now all of a sudden we finalized when and where we should do event learnings. But it's also bad because sometimes we did it on things that probably we should not have done. And so people felt like, well, it's kind of wasting time. But it was also those same people that when I was in a meeting, hey, have y'all done a learning team yet? And I have people that email me all the time, hey, I want to be that fresh set of eyes. So just, I would say there's a balance there, but I would caution you to do more than not.
Do you have some examples of where it's not a good idea to do this?
So a bee sting? No, okay. You don't want to do that. A lot of times a backing accident, unless you start seeing some common trends like y'all were talking about with the information yesterday. The information rich is kind of my category. When people are asking me, should we or should we not? And we have a post-job briefing as well, so that's kind of our two options. Do you do a post-job briefing or do you do this whole event learning? I ask them, do you think it's information rich? Is there a lot to it or is it pretty simple? So that's kind of my category.
And for us, the two tools that we're mostly using right now are after-action reviews. And so if it seems like a pretty simple problem, we'll say, let's just do an after-action review instead. So we're mainly doing learning teams or after-action reviews. We have done a learning team. They're fantastic. I mean, the people that are involved in them say, thank you for listening to us. And I mean, it really surprises me, the feedback from the worker when we've done learning teams. They're very grateful to be listened to. Yes?
Just a question. Have you had any, probably Stephanie, have you had any requests for learning teams in a proactive nature? In other
words,
as a not a response to an event?
Yeah, so I actually got a couple slides on that I'm going to cover in a little bit, but that's kind of where we've moved to. A lot of the event learnings we've been doing recently are more proactive in nature. Yes.
How long would an average learning team take? What would be reasonable?
A good question. If you do it ideally where you have the meeting, the soak time overnight, and then another meeting, I would say a total day. But it just depends. Some of them are like 2 or 3 days. Some of them are a couple hours. Once again, how complicated are they?
And our experience has been that there's 2 hours in a meeting, an hour for the first part, and then soak time, and then another hour. That's been one of the ways that we've been selling it, is that you're not spending a lot of time in meetings. Capacity. Yeah, so we started to talk about this. I mean, that's one of the challenges with it, is how do you find the capacity to do these, even though you find them valuable? And that's one that we're struggling with. So far, we've trained a handful of folks, maybe 15 people. Our safety team, which is about 10 people that support 80 power plants. And so this is actually one that we have not figured out yet, is how to have the capacity. We have some thoughts on that. We need to train more people. And we also think that we probably need to get a little bit more relaxed about it, instead of, you know, making it such a big deal and having all this structure. And it almost sounds like some of the ones, like when you're more mature in the process, and maybe you can speak to this, that they're more casual and not as planning heavy. I don't know if I'm putting that right.
And sometimes they become organic. You don't, they just happen, and you didn't even know they were happening. They start asking questions on their own.
Follow up and follow through. Okay, another lesson on what not to do. On some of our learning teams, we actually didn't get the actions assigned and with due dates documented. So we walk out and we're like, oh, we have all these actions. Oh, who's going to do them? And so we've also, I think, fallen into the trap where sometimes the facilitator's taking the actions. Lessons on that.
Yeah, so one of the things is we always try to make sure we know who's going to do it in time frame before we walk out of the room. But the other thing we've done recently is we now have it in a database. We're just using a SharePoint site, but it's all automated. It's got due dates, and it lets the managers know if it's not being done. So we're able to create those reports and say, hey, these are the things that we have coming up. And if they think their manager is going to see that, all of a sudden it gets done. So we're just trying to do that forward accountability to make sure, hey, if it happens once, okay, happens twice, shame on us that we didn't follow up on that. And so that's really where we're putting our emphasis. Instead of on the rear accountability, let's make sure we do that forward accountability and we take care of those action items.
So the last one's training facilitators. The way that we trained our facilitators so far, as I mentioned to you earlier, is we basically hired Bob Edwards to come in and lead a couple of learning teams, and they observed. That was pretty much it. So that's what we've done. And we don't think that that's complete. And I think you were doing some things that we'd like to learn from.
Well, we just had Bob come in. I mean, he's awesome. And he just spends the day with them and really teaches you all those soft skills that you were talking about. But I've actually never seen Bob do an event learning. I mean, that's just crazy. Yeah. But I've been in many of his classes.
The other thing that you mentioned when we talked yesterday about the training that you do for facilitators is you teach them how to ask questions. Mm-hmm. Right? And I think that's really key.
Yes, how to ask the questions.
Okay, now we go on to early strategies. Early strategies. We've already talked about this one, that one of our early strategies is to build cross-plant relationships. So when we do a learning team, we're always looking to bring people from different plants into the room.
Yeah, so what we've done in distribution is we may have someone from marketing or some sort of transmission organization. As much as we can get everybody involved, the better we are.
And I think that Jeffrey, you just spoke to this one, right? If somebody asks, should we do a learning team? The answer is yes, especially early on, right? So that people begin to get used to the process and know what the process is. This came up earlier too, which is, do you ever look proactively for opportunities to do a learning team? And so there's some areas that we were looking, and in fact, one of the best ones that I led was one of those proactive looking for an opportunity to do a learning team, and that's on collector brush maintenance, and that's actually the example that I'm going to feature. But I think that there are some other things that you can look at. I know Todd in his book says, go and ask, where's our next accident going to happen? And that's how I identified collector brush maintenance. But the other things that we noticed that are good opportunities for learning teams is when you have a big disconnect between the black line and blue line. And what that means is if actual work is greatly different from how you think work is happening, if it's really big, then there's probably some learning opportunities there. And our last strategy is that, as painful as it is at times, because we normally don't want to keep people away from their jobs for more than a day, soak time is a must. And we have compromised on when we have soak time, such as we'll do soak time over lunch. So we'll start learning team in the morning, do soak time at lunch, and then the second session of learning team in the afternoon, when ideally you want your soak time to be overnight. But so we're compromising on how we do soak time, but we're not compromising on giving up soak time, because it's a key and critical part to the process.
Yeah, if you can do it overnight, great. If not, try to make it work. I get a lot of phone calls at 7 a.m. the next morning because they have that time to process, and they thought about something, and they call me, and they're so excited. I mean, it's like 7:01. Hey, I thought about this last night. I think we need to get everybody back together. And we will, whatever we need to do. But I love that they're still thinking about it once they leave the meeting. All right, we covered this a little bit, but, you know, when to do an event learning, you probably don't want to do it for a bee sting or a minor incident. But what I'll tell you is we started off doing them for safety incidences, but we've really expanded upon that, doing near misses, success stories. I mean, we don't even have to have an event to happen. If we have a success story, let's figure out why it was successful so we can learn from that and make sure we replicate that again. We're also looking at our processes and projects. And I say all this to say you can really use it for anything. I mean, every time we have something come up, you think you can do an event learning on that? Yeah, I think we can. Let's get everybody together on that. And like Jeff was talking about, make sure it's information rich and it's a quality time for everybody. So when you asked earlier about proactive event learnings, well, we had a situation where an employee ended up in 8 feet of water a couple days after Christmas when we had some flooding. As part of the outcome, we said, hey, y'all need to look at your flood plans because, you know, we don't get a 100-year flood every day. And so we did, and we found so many things. So all these different organizations had some proactive event learnings, and they found out so many issues that are now resolved, and we put them to bed. So if we do have another flood situation, we're in a lot better situation. So we're making money. I had no idea that there's so many ways to steal power. We're using that process to figure out how these thieves are working. I've learned a lot through that as well. Our lost meter, you know, install a meter and we don't hook it to the system. We got a lot of those out there too. Or improving our processes. I don't know if y'all have service savers, but we have a hard, hard time figuring out where they go. Or we also had a guy, three times we turned off his power after he paid his bill. There was something in our system because he had two accounts. We weren't putting it on the right account. And so this big corporation, we turned off his power. You think he was a little mad? I was mad for him. So we tried to make that better and really and truly got many, many holes that we fixed through that one. So we're making money. We're improving processes. We're trying to be proactive. We're seeing the other side of this. I mean, initially, I think we were very reactive, but now we're really kind of tuning that in and looking at different opportunities to use it.
Que piensas? What do you think? That was Spanish, sorry. The All-Girl Podcast, honorarily me included. I think it's as good as anything. In fact, I think it's a really good run-through of what it is we want learning to look like operationally when you use small, engaged, empowered teams of workers. The Black Line, Blue Line, if you don't know this, well, first of all, where have you been? But if you don't know it, the Black Line is work is imagined, the Blue Line is work is done. And so what we look for is some kind of difference between work is imagined and work is done, and that's a big part of that discussion. I thought this is a great podcast. Actually, million-dollar presentation, and thank you again to WEC. Thanks, Beth, and thanks, Stephanie. I think people will really, really enjoy this one. I'm all froggy. My throat's all froggy. It's because I sat and listened to this whole thing again, and I was there. So I'm like three times into this. And you probably will be too. It's that good. Hey, thanks for your time. As always, I'm so glad you're part of the podcast. Tell your friends. And if you like it, put a review somewhere. That really makes a difference. Get some people to listen. I think it makes a big impact on the world. And you must too, because we're spending time together. Sorry about the length. But again, what would you tell me what you'd cut out of this one. Go ahead. Just tell me. I'll wait. You got nothing? Okay. Until then, learn something new every single day. Have as much fun as you possibly can. And for goodness sakes, be safe.